Hello, this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we have Sean Nittner with us.
Hi there.
And he's going to tell us about himself and Big Bad Con.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, so Sean, when did you start gaming? We'll start there.
When did I start gaming? Whoa, you want to go to the Wayback Machine. Okay. I was 12. I was in the library at my middle school, and there were a bunch of guys sitting around a table, and it sounded like they were having fun, and I was kind of eavesdropping on them. And I said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're playing D&D." And I said, "Oh, cool. Can I play?" And they said, "Sure. You can be this gnome that's trapped in a sack." And I was like, "That sounds great. I don't know what that means." And they said, "Well, you're a gnome and you're in a sack." And I'm like, oh okay. Thanks for clarifying. And I went from there. And wow. With the exception of a few dry spells, whenever I moved and you had to find a new gaming group or people to game with online, I've pretty much been gaming ever since. So yeah, for forever, basically.
So where was this, Sean? Did you grow up in the Bay Area, or were you in?
No, I grew up in a tiny little town called Mendocino, which is about 3.5 hours north of the Bay Area. It's a little tourist town. It's known for its whale watching and the music festival, a little tchotchke kind of shops. And I was born in Oakland, but when I was very young, my parents moved up to Mendocino, and they opened up a store, two stores actually. My mom and my dad both had their own, and yeah, it was pretty idyllic. There wasn't really much to do except for play sports, get high, or play D&D. So I chose play D&D.
Wow. So did they have competing stores? You know,
No. My dad had a deli, which I started working at age 11 and a half, which is the youngest age you can work in a family-owned restaurant and get a work permit, or family-owned store and get a work permit in California, wow. At least at the time. I was making an exciting $3.35 an hour minimum wage.
Hey, that's not bad.
Yeah. It all went towards my college fund. And my mom, several years later, opened up an antiques and interior store that she, because she is an interior designer, and that she still runs to this day. It's moved. It's changed. It's gone mobile for a while, and now it's back to having a storefront again. So, and she's actually back up in the area after being in LA for several years.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So, yeah.
So you've been playing in different groups and having a good old time. And somewhere you decide to start a convention.
Yeah.
So we kind of talked about that before when we did the interview at KublaCon, but we can just go over that a little bit again.
Sure. Yeah. So I went to my first gaming convention was KublaCon. Kubla. I played in a game with Rich Taylor, who has passed away, unfortunately. Good, very good friend, very good man. Very sad to have lost Rich. I played in a game with Rich Taylor. It was a Buffy game, and I was like, whoa, I've never played. You know, it was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and we were playing White Hats, and we were being really ridiculous and silly, and I was like, wow, I'd played non-D&D games, but I'd never played non-serious games, really, and I'd certainly never played any kind of, like, indie or newer games, and so I played in it, and I had a blast, and then I went to Conquest, I think was the next one I went after that, and he was running again, and I sort of dropped in, and I got to know the Good Omens guys, and that was Mike Bogan and Greg Matheson and Rich Taylor and a bunch of really wonderful people. And they sort of had this ethos about bringing high quality games to conventions, things that they had play tested, things that the character sheets were nice and cleanly made, things that had shared spotlight, things that had more diverse characters in them. And also that they wanted to bring kind of a greater diversity of games to the table. At the time, it was just D&D, Call of Cthulhu, and Hero System, pretty much everywhere you looked. I mean, that was the vast majority of the games offered. And so we were offering wild things like White Wolf, really, really out there games. But also, you know, some smaller indie games like Dogs in the Vineyard and like the aforementioned Buffy by Eden Studios.
Right.
So I very, very quickly was sort of enamored with this sort of enamored with their philosophy and with the games that they're running. And so I was getting into all of the games that I possibly could. And I also asked, you know, how does one become a member of Good Omens? And they said, oh, it's easy. You just run an audition game for us. It's pretty relaxed. I was anything but relaxed. I was terrified. I play tested this game that I ran for them, which was a gnome adventure game. It was called Dr. Gnome. And it was this, you see, there's this, even though I don't have any love for them, there's this gnome trend in my gaming. I don't quite know how it sticks around, but I was playtesting this game at I started playtesting this game with just some random people at midnight one night. We finished at 3:30, 4 in the morning, and I got back to my tent because I was camping at this music festival. I got back, my partner said, our child is coming now. I'm about to have our baby. And so the same day that my daughter Mara was born was the day that I finished that playtest game, which eventually got me into Good Omens. So who knows what the rhyme or reason to that is, but we hopped in the car, drove out of this middle of nowhere camp, and had our second kiddo. Wow. It was exciting times.
Yeah.
So suffice to say, that game stuck very much in my head. And when I went to run it for the Good Omens folks, the story alone, I think, got me some cred. Just telling them how it came to be.
Kidding.
But they liked the game and they had a good time. And then I was a part of the group. And pretty much as soon as I got into Good Omens, like immediately I said, well, we should do all kinds of Good Omens things. So, like, we should have Good Omens dice. We should have Good Omens t-shirts. We should ask for a room at a convention to be the Good Omens room where we put all our games like back to back in there so that, you know, we use the space. And that's just sort of the person I am. I'm kind of a, you know, just like, let's just do stuff. And the group sort of prided themselves on being a disorganization. They were like, yeah, sure, Sean, if you want to do it, go for it. But there was no like order. There was no like who's in charge. It was just, yeah, you're a part of us, so do whatever you want, I guess.
Chaos.
It was chaos, and it was beautiful chaos, but it was chaos.
Yeah.
And so I you know, very quickly made t-shirts and dice and all these things, and then not very long after, I said we should have our own con. We should post run games. And everyone kind of looked again like, okay, sure, whatever, Sean. And I don't think anyone thought it was really going to happen. I think they were just like, okay, go keep smoking whatever you're smoking, right? Like, but it did. I talked to Chris Hanrahan, who ran Endgame at the time, or was one of the owners of Endgame at the time. And I asked, hey, could we use your mezzanine space? And he said, sure, as long as you don't charge for it. So that sort of gave the idea of collecting food for the Alameda County Community Food Bank as a price of admission, because we weren't going to, you know, Chris wasn't charging us, but that also meant we weren't going to charge anybody. And I really liked that. I was really happy about that, is that we weren't doing it for profit. We were doing it for the love of the games and to run really great games. And then I think people really also got behind that. They were excited about a charity event. And while we were there, we were always sort of shilling Endgame too. We said, you know, thanks to Endgame for hosting us. Please go buy games downstairs, which I think we did. So it was a good setup, I think, for everybody. And that was a one-day event. We'd squeezed three games in at seven tables. So we had 21 games.
Wow.
And we packed the whole space, and it was loud and it was hard to hear. But we had a great time. And we did that seven times. We did that for 7 years. And we invited guests, you know, people who weren't members of Good Omens, but we knew they were really great GMs, and they ran games too. And it was a fantastic event. I really enjoyed it. And I really wanted to do something more, but I didn't know how to do more. Like, Endgame couldn't really give us more than one day. And I think it would be hard to have a multi-day event without a place to stay. And a lot of folks had been sort of bemoaning the quality of the RPG tracks at a particular convention. And they said, why don't you do something bigger? I think it was my friend Steve Dunn who said, Sean, you should just put on a con, like a full one. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. I thought briefly for a little bit about doing it through Good Omens. But, you know, that chaos that I mentioned earlier was just, it seemed like it wasn't going to scale well. You know, it was great when it was just like, well, it's the 15 or 16 of us and we're all running games and it's all good. But when it has to be much bigger, when it has to be a ton of GMs and sorting out hotel contracts and all this stuff, I really needed to be able to have the sort of autonomy to sort it all out. So right. I said, you know, keep going with it. Keep going with the Good Omens Con. That's great. I'm happy for that to continue existing, but I'm going to go off and start this other thing. And I had my kids who were, see, this was 10 years ago, so who were 7 and 5 at the time. And I was in the kitchen and I was making breakfast and I was telling them that I'm going to start a con. And they're like, cool, what's it going to be called? And I was like, I have no idea. And my little one said Monkey Con. And I was like, no, I don't really like, you know, I've thought about it. And we had some other ideas that were all equally not great. And then my biggest said Big Bad Con. And I was like, huh, yeah, kind of like that. And there we are.
Cool. So, well, yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember the t-shirts at DungeonCon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell's a Good Omens production?
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it in the program. I'm like, what does that mean? And I never really investigated further, but I was like, remember, weren't they like black t-shirts?
Yeah. Yeah. They're black t-shirts. We started with black t-shirts that had the white Good Omens logo.
Yeah.
And then we also eventually, because we were very fancy, got bowling shirts or bowling shirts. And
yeah.
Those are real slick.
Bowling league.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think I don't know if I still have mine. We got them embroidered. It was very silly, but yeah, I mean, I don't think that needs to exist today necessarily. I think that there are tons of great games you can run out there by tons of wonderful people. But at the time we offered a really valuable support network for each other. We would play test each other's games. You know, we'd get together and we'd say, well, this is the game I want to run in a con. And play it out, and we give feedback on the characters, on the plot, on the, you know, on everything. And it was really good support group, I think, for each other too. And I think the end result was that we had, I don't necessarily want to say better games, because I think a lot of other people had other sort of support groups, but we had very nicely polished games. We offered a really good a lot of fun for folks playing in them.
Yeah, I think you kind of had like a trickle effect, or I don't know, a wave in the pond, because you're right. When I was at many, you know, cons, the games were like hit and miss. And sometimes, and even me, I would run a game and I wouldn't play test it. I would just run whatever idea I had in my head. And then later on, like people like Gil and Shannon and Michael Garcia, they were talking about play testing their game. And I'm like, man, that seems like a lot of work. But I understood later, I'm like, oh, that they're trying to make their game better. Yeah. They're trying to improve any problems they might have with the game. And so, unfortunately, that's hit me too. So I try to run games before I run them at a con.
I think it's great.
No, I say unfortunate because it just means a lot more work for me.
Yes, indeed. But I mean, that depends. Do you like running? I love running games. So for me, it's like, well, it's work, but it's work I love to do. Right. And that's really, you know, my focus in gaming has really shifted a lot. And so I very much focus on like play to find out games where I don't know the answer. I just know the game, you know, we're going to start with a problem and I'll throw something at the players and we'll just see what happens. And so
that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Back in the day, playtesting was incredibly valuable because I had this very scripted storyline and I wanted to make sure everything I accounted for all the possibilities. And so when the players inevitably turned left when you expected them to turn right, playtesting was a great way to figure out, well, how do I not just make all the choices meaningless by saying, oh, you turn left? Okay, I'm flipping the map over and now turn left. Because then you're like, well, none of your choices matter, right? Like, how do you keep choices mattering but still accommodate for it? And so playtesting was hugely valuable then. Now that a lot of my games, they're all unique, they're all different. I just sort of start with, and a lot of times I don't even know what the problem is. We'll make characters, we'll figure out what they're interested in. And I'm like, oh, that seems like it would go wrong. And you know, sort of introduce conflict or challenges that way. And so playtesting now for me is a little bit more about understanding the system, understanding the game mechanics, and I don't feel the need to do it as much when it's a game I've played a lot. Because I don't have any kind of story that I'm trying to tell. But I think at the time it was immensely valuable for making those not feel forced.
Cool. So you go from not headlining, but trying to organize the chaos is Good Omens.
Yeah.
and you decide to run your own game con, Big Bad Con. So that's a lot of work for one person, right? Usually there's committees at Didi's DungeonCon. You have Mike and his support people at Kubla, and I don't know what's going on at PacificCon, but I'm sure they have, you know, Gabriel and his support people. You know, you seem to be the one running the whole show.
Well, it's very kind of you to say. In the beginning, that was very...
Well, you got a little gremlin somewhere? Yeah, no. I don't see anybody.
In the beginning, that was very true. It was, yeah. I mean, our first con was, I can't remember, it was 180 people, something like that.
Okay.
And yeah, it was, I had a handful of volunteers that worked the reg desk, and I did the website, I did the signups, I did the hotel negotiations. I pretty much did everything solo in the beginning. And it was, I don't know how I did it either. Frankly, I can't look back at that time and understand the rhyme or reason behind it. But now we have a staff of almost 20 people. We have an accessibility coordinator and a community coordinator, an events coordinator, a LARP coordinator. I mean, we've got people handling many, many facets. I still do a lot of the Kickstarter work. I recruit a lot of our stretch goal guests. I do a lot of the hotel liaising. So there's still a lot of tasks on my shoulder, which I'm slowly parceling out. The right. biggest one was RP was game coordination. Sophie Lagasse is my angel. She has saved me from so many hours of recruiting GMs and publishing games on the website and scheduling games and just doing this, frankly, just sort of nightmarish task of getting all the games out there. Because we had more than 400 events last year, and that's just a lot to, wow. It's a lot to juggle. And Sophie has been great. Jen Martin has stepped up as LARP coordinator this year, and she's been fantastic recruiting and scheduling LARPs. And I've got both Ezra and Shanti working on board games. So lots of really, really good, wonderful people that are helping. And then, you know, people that are helping offer perspectives that I can't really see. So Anne Faye Kilpatrick is our accessibility coordinator. She uses a wheelchair. She's very familiar with a lot of the other sort of accessibility considerations. And she has helped so much in figuring out, is this ramp too steep? Is this doorway wide enough? Are these bathrooms really compliant? You know, they can say it, but are they really? Does this LARP require you to be able to stand up and move around? What kind of vision is needed, you know, to be able to read these signs? And those are perspectives that I just don't have. And so,
well, how could you?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You're not in a wheelchair. You don't live in a wheelchair and deal with that kind of stuff.
But you know, it applies to vision impairment. You know, people who are deaf, people who are blind. Right. There's all of these things that I think getting the perspectives. You know, we had Elsa Sue Henson Henry give us her consultation as well. And she's been fantastic as a blind advocate. And she's given us tons of information there. And so we're just sort of parceling it together. And we have so many really, really good people that have helped us, I think, make a more accessible, more approachable space, more perspectives involved, you know, and that's really important to me. So even though doing all the work I don't mind it. A, it's impossible. There's too much. And B, I just can't, there's just no way I can think of everything. So I'm very glad.
Well, you know, your first convention was 180,
yeah.
And you know, you had all the people who were going to run games, and it was strictly RPGs, right?
RPGs and LARPs, yeah.
Oh, LARPs, yeah. And then now you have over 400 games. So what is your expected attendance that you're kind of guessing?
This year, I think we're going to hit 1,000, which is
mind-boggling.
It's just, we have over 500 now, and if from the Kickstarter, and if history repeats itself, we generally double that. So
wow,
right? It's high enough that it's very, very conceivable. You heard it here first, folks, that I will cap attendance. I may just say once we get to a certain number, nope, sorry, no more badges are being sold. And the reason for that is that the space is only so big, that there's only so many events. And I really, really don't want to create a scenario where I say we have X number of spaces available in games and more than X people who want them. I can't always guarantee that you'll get into the game you want, but I very much want to ensure that there's a possibility that everybody could get into a game. Right. I think it's healthy to not play back to back to back to back to back, but I kind of want to keep it in my mind that if someone does want to do that, they want to just play straight through the con, there should always be something available for them. And if I oversell the con, that won't be the case. So I did it in 2017 and it worked out fine. I just put a cap on it because we had hit that number, and I, which was 650 at the time. Wow. And I said, you know, I don't feel like we can offer more games to people. And so I said, I'm going to cap attendance until we open up game submission. Everyone's picked their games. Everyone's gotten into games. And then once all the people who had already had badges had gotten in, I reopened it and said, okay, if you still want to come, here's what we have left. Here's what's still available. And if you don't want to come, that's great. That's fine. I mean, it's not great, but it's fine. But I just didn't want to, you know, be overselling it. And still, right, most of the people that I had told had to wait were still bought badges anyway. But I felt like that was the fair way to ensure that everyone who had up to that point bought a badge would have a chance of getting into an event when they wanted to. So
that's a crazy idea in the game con experience, right? You know, you're crazy that you're trying to get everybody a game or a chance at a game when they sign up. It's just not the way it's done. You got to oversell the tickets, and then you got to get all the gruntled attendees to yell at you because there's no game ticket.
I don't like that. No, man.
I'm just messing with you. That's fantastic, right? Because like that's what you want. You want everybody. Or not every, you can't please everybody all the time, but you know, you're trying to maximize the people not complaining. I don't know, I'm saying that backwards, but
I hear you.
That's amazing. I mean, that's an amazing concept.
Yeah. I mean, today's part of it is area. That Big Bad is a nonprofit. I pull $0 a year from it. It is done out of love. There are some of our staff members that because they have to fly out, because they put so much energy into it, we do pay a few of them. But for the most part, right, by and large, it's an entirely volunteer operation. So we don't have a lot of expenses. We don't have none of the board members are drawing a salary or anything like that. So we don't, you know, we have to cover the hotel costs. We have to cover the printing program and website and advertising costs, which are not insubstantial. They're significant. Right. But after that, you know, there's not a hungry corporation behind all this trying to get money out of it. So it really frees us up in terms of that particular vector, right? And the Kickstarter is a really good way to gauge how big the con will be and what we can sort of afford. So when I say every $1,500 we get a new stretch goal guest that flies out, I know that the math of that works out more or less to say we'll have enough to get them to the con, because that $1,500 represents people submitting for all sorts of different things, but also it kind of gives me a sense of what the total number of attendees are going to be at the end as well. You know, the nice thing about running a Kickstarter 5 years in a row is that you see patterns and you go, okay, cool. Right. We're going to get double the number of backers as attendees. We're going to get this much a year. And this year, actually, we really blew past my goals. I was amazed. So this year we started the Babylon Equity Project, which is a project to bring more people of color to the con. Last year, DC came out to the con and they had a great time, and they were on several panels and they felt like they were really heard, and they said it's a really great environment, but they just didn't feel like there were enough people of color at the con. And, you know, they said it's a good space for people of color. There's just not enough of them there. And
I'm sorry I didn't go. No, it's, that's my
it's
fault.
So, yeah, that was its all. It was you not being there that did it. No, but they wrote about it in an article, and I said, DC, you're so right. How do you feel about working with me to improve that? And they said, yeah, let's do it. So we talked back and forth many times, and eventually we formed the Babylon Equity Project, which they spearheaded. We worked in cooperation, but it is not a Big Bad con project. It is its own entity. It may be used in the future to serve other cons, to serve other groups, to bring more people of color or to support people of color in various other facilities. But this year, it's being used to bring over 30 people of color specifically, to Big Bad. Almost all of them that have never been before. I think maybe 3, 4, 5 of the folks that we're bringing out have attended in the past, but the vast majority had never been to Big Bad before. And so it's a lot of new folks coming out, which is going to be great. But I sort of thought that, and we raised $26,000 to do that. And I thought, well, at $26,000, you know, that's probably going to take a little bit out of our Kickstarter budget, our Kickstarter funding, because a lot of people, I imagined, were going to say, well, I gave to the to Babylon, I can't give to the Kickstarter as well. Notably, right. The Babylon Equity Project started a week before the Kickstarter launched, and it funded in 2 days. So we just closed it. We realized that DC really can't manage more than 30 people. That's a logistical challenge to get them flights and rooms and all that stuff. So we stopped it at the 32 people, I think that it was, that we're bringing out. And so the nice thing is it wasn't running at the same time, but still I thought, well, there's going to be people who said, you know, I gave to that, I can't give to both. And that was fine.
Yeah, makes sense.
Man, was I wrong. So if you looked at our trajectory over the last 5 years, and you saw that last year was $32,000, and the previous year was $27,000, and the previous year before that was $22,000, you'd probably do the math and say we'd probably making $5,000 more a year. So probably this year we'll make $37,000. Right. That's what I thought. We made $44,500.
Pretty
yeah,
good.
Our last stretch goal was a 40,000. I was just like, that's it. I got no more. Just like DC, I can only manage so many people. Like that's it. So, you know, the rest of it, a lot of it's going to the scholarship fund, which is going to help even more people from various marginalized groups come to the con. But end of the day, it's going to be the question, not of what do we have enough money, but are we spending it in the best possible way? Are we doing the most good for the people that are attending? And we also give to Doctors Without Borders. So then the question was like, how significant of a, there's some actual legal complications around charities giving to each other. So it's like, how much can we give them as well? Those are good problems to have. How do I spend this money to make the con even better? Give me that problem any day of the week. I will take it on.
So you have a con that was built with that kind of ideology of good omens, good games run by good GMs, and it was pretty successful that way. How did it morph to this, you know, super inclusive, and the fact that you actually listened to people and went out of your way to ask people, hey, you know, what don't you see at my con? And I'm sure other people who run cons kind of do the same thing, but it seems like you're like jumping into the pool head first.
Thank you. That's the intent. That's the intent. I think inclusivity is an action, right? It's not a destination. It's a thing that we're just going to keep on working on doing. We're never really going to get there. So I feel that that it's, I mean, there is a point where you sort of burn out, where you say, well, this is as much as I can do. And I think everybody hits that at some point or another. But I don't think there's ever enough to be done in total. And in terms of my own journey on this front of trying to make Big Bad Con as inviting and welcoming place as I can be, there's several sort of touchstone events. I talked about one last time we talked with Brianna coming out. That was a really big, I think, listeners, go back to that. If you haven't heard it, go back to that episode. I talked a lot about Brianna coming, transitioning and presenting as female for the first time, Big Bad. That was a huge element. I'll talk about another one this time, though, just sort of to highlight different things. My good friends, Kate and Hakan, came to Big Bad Con, and they had never been in a LARP before. And they didn't really know. Again, this is another case of like, well, I'm so glad it happened this way. It makes me want to keep reproducing this effect. Kate and Hakan had never been in a LARP before. They played in a couple LARPs at Big Bad, and they played with LARP designers. They played with really welcoming, wonderful folks that encouraged them to not only play the games, but also conceive of the idea of making them themselves. Several years later, Kate and Khan have now formed Thorny Games. They've made the game Sign, which is a reflection on deaf Nicaraguan children in the 70s who invented a sign language. And it sort of reviews that experience that they had. It doesn't attempt to emulate it because we can't, because we're not deaf Nicaraguan kids in the 70s, but it does a fully silent game, you know, where you you try to figure out a little bit of the experience of what it's like to try and create a sign language together. And they did consultation with many, many deaf people. They did a consultation with the Nicaraguan Sign Language group. In fact, they've flown down there two or three times now to talk about it. They've presented this at academic conferences. They've made that. They've made Dialect, which is the game about how language is created and lost, how cultures are sort of make their own language, and then cultures will sometimes disappear and be absorbed, and how that language gets lost. And now they're making Xeno language. You can tell they have a big fixation on language. That is their thing. But I take enormous amount of glee and joy from the fact that a catalyst for them doing that was coming to Big Bad and feeling like, I can do this too. And then they did. And now they've been Gen Con in guests of honor. They've been featured by IndieCade. And I feel like Big Bad had some small part in facilitating the community that made that happen. And I just want to keep doing everything I can to make more of those opportunities. You know, it won't happen every time to everybody, but the fact that it can happen, because people are warm and welcoming and encouraging people to experiment, try new things. We have tons of playtest games. Anytime someone says, hey, can I playtest my game here? I say, absolutely. We mark it as a playtest. And that means the people who are signing up for it know that that's what they're getting into and are often extremely enthusiastic about it. They want to see this new game in development and help people build it. And that particular angle doesn't cut across any particular lines of marginalization necessarily, but I think bringing more Black and Brown creators to the con, bringing more queer folks to the con, bringing more women to the con is all to be a place where they can present their works and have people give them feedback and have people embrace them and celebrate them and encourage them is huge. So that's one of my stories. I try to tell one each time. So right now, even the Thorny Game story.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, that
is amazing. I think it's really cool because it's really important to make people feel comfortable. And I think Big Bad has done that, at least from what I've heard.
It's our goal. I was at a conference the other day and I heard somebody say something really, really smart. And I'm gonna steal it. I'm gonna tell it to you. And so everyone on your list can everyone listening can maybe benefit from this too. This is at this inclusivity conference at UC Berkeley. And they said, diversity is when you're asked to the dance. Inclusion is when someone asks you to dance. Belonging is when you feel safe to dance in any style that you want or like. And equity is when you get to be one of the folks that chooses the DJ. And I think that's a really great ramp of like, diversity is really the beginning. And it keeps progressing. And we're not trying to check boxes of saying, cool, we have somebody from each of these marginalized groups here. So that means we're doing it right. Well, cool. That's a great start. But it's, do they also feel like it's their space too? Does everybody there feel like they have a part of it? Does everybody there feel like they have equity? In equity in the sense of like your house having gaining value, do they feel like they are part of the value of the event? Do they feel like they have say? And that has to do with the people that we bring onto our staff, and that has to do with the stretch goal guests that we bring out, and of course now the Babylon Equity Project and the scholarship program. But this was a ladder that I heard about last week, so I don't want to claim that I've been following this path all along, but I listened to it and I was like, yes, that very much resonates with me. That is something that I see and want to focus on even more having heard it.
Well, the fact that you're so open about everything, you know, it's pretty amazing, because I see games that are being run at Big Bad Con that I don't see at any other con. You know, a lot of these are very small, I don't know, run or print.
Sure,
I don't know,
small press games, absolutely, yeah.
Small press games. And some of them, you know, I was just online and I bought this game about, smashing female stereotypes. And I bought it for like $5, the PDF. It was no big deal. But those are the kinds of games that you don't normally see at any other con in the Bay Area. And here at Big Bad Con, it seems like, I'm not saying you're full of them, but there's quite a few of those kind of games.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, we have a very prominent and I hope comfortable queer audience at the con, where they feel very comfortable saying like, I want to run some queer games, or I want to run some games, like you said, that smash notions of, sort of ingrained patriarchal notions that we have about women in society. And I think there are a lot of folks that are coming that are looking for that. And the sad part is like, a lot of them are in the Bay Area, which tells me that if these games aren't being played at other cons, it's not because there aren't people that would want to play them. It's, I don't know why it is. I don't want to prescribe the reasons, but I don't think Big Bad is unique geographically. We're in the same area as all the others. And a lot of people that come out are locals. So I think there's an appetite for those games. And I'm really glad to satisfy that as much as we can.
No, definitely. I've been going to gaming conventions since 1980 something. I don't want to date myself.
You got me. You got
you just did.
But you know, back then, you know, I went to Pacific Con, you know, when it was still at the Dumphy at the San Mateo in San Mateo.
I went to San Mateo. And, I think the last year it was there.
Yeah, I think it was 1992, 93. Anyway, so you know, I remember going during the '80s and. You know, it was a lot of guys, a lot of white guys, and me and my brother, you know, not that I ever felt discriminated against. And that's amazing because I've heard horror stories about people of color, people of different genders and stuff being discriminated, women. And luckily for me, I've never felt that or I never experienced that. So but it, I did notice that there wasn't a lot of people that looked like me. And that didn't bother me, but that's just the way it was. And then as you fast forward to now, you know, with Big Bad Con, I think, you know, that's great strides that the role-playing community here has made in making people feel more comfortable going to a con and being who they are.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's so good to hear because that's very important for me. And I feel like you have to, you know, everybody is welcome is an empty statement in my mind. You absolutely have to reach out to people, and that means focusing. So the beginning of Big Bad, you know, the first time I think I was really focusing on bringing more voices to the con, as I was really trying to bring more women to the con, trying to make, you know, that I saw a very strong gender divide, like you said, a lot of guys. And then my next shift was to try and bring more queer folks to the con. And we had a few non-binary folks, a few trans folks, but like I really wanted people to LGBTQIA individuals to like to feel safe and welcomed, that this was like a haven for them. And I feel like that's been very successful. And now the shift is really to bring more people of color to the con, you know, and I think that's started to happen already. I feel like the con has started to get a little less white already, but this year is going to be the big push, right? And that push is probably going to take a couple years, right? It's not a one-time thing, one and done. Right. And I'm already working with our accessibility coordinator to say, well, in 2-3 years, what's it going to look like if we push to try and bring people with various disabilities to the con to make them feel really comfortable? And that's for me, that's a lot trickier because you can't just say, hey, everybody, regardless of ability, you're welcome here. We really want people with disabilities to come, because you actually have to program for that. If you're going to invite blind people to attend your con, then you need to make sure that there are capacity for them to get, you know, accessibility tools for them to be able to hear all the instructions that are being given everywhere. If you're going to bring deaf people to the con, you need to bring sign language interpreters. You know, like those are not, you can't just say you're welcome here and be done with it. You actually need to provide the infrastructure to make sure that it is accessible to them. So I'm thinking about that. That's 2-3 years out before I really make that big push. And our hope is to sort of build that infrastructure up in the meantime, so that when we do say, please come out, we mean it. And it's not an empty invitation. Like, please come out, but except for everything about this is, you know, perilous to you or difficult for you. You know? So that's, and I mean, and I'm sure by the time that happens, we'll be looking at another group and going, how do we make the space better for them? Yeah. Like I said, it's an activity, right? It's an activity, not a destination. Just keep working at it.
Yes. You're obviously, Big Bad Con has been really successful. You're going to hit about 1,000 people. So. Is Walnut Creek, the Marriott there, going to be able to handle more people?
That's such a good question, Saul. I mean, maybe. So the good news is that I do have more game rooms this year. Last year we had 35, and this year we have 45. 10 extra game rooms will help a lot. So that's fantastic. I have all of the like individual floor boardrooms, which I've never used before, and I might start using those. They're kind of like 10 people rooms, so they could maybe hold two small tables or one big or medium size event. So I could start using those. But the big question is just guest rooms. Like, will we have enough rooms for the people who are attending to stay? And the answer is, I don't think so. I really don't. But the good news is that right next to it, there are two other hotels. There's a Motel 6, which, it's a Motel 6. It's not luxurious staying, but it's pretty inexpensive. And there's another one that's a little nicer, but it's a bit of a hike. It's like three or four blocks away, which is, I don't think, too horrible. It's funny you ask it, because in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have a planning meeting with the other Big Bed Con leaders. And that's one of the things we're going to be talking about is do we reach out to those places and ask for a room block? I've never done that before. I've never asked for a room block at a place that we weren't hosting the convention, but it might really be the thing we need to do. So I think this year, yes, we'll be good. I think 2020, probably will be good. 2021 and beyond, who even knows? I think I told you last time we were there, the Hyatt is courting us, right? Like, they asked us to come out.
Right.
And that feels ludicrous to me to be in a space that big, but maybe we'll need it. Maybe we'll be ready for it. So, yeah.
Well, I don't remember Kublai Khan got to the Hyatt Regency in 2003, 2004. And I think their numbers, I don't think they were quite at 2000 yet, but if anybody can make more people come to a con, it's you, Sean, because I don't know if any of you have ever met Sean that listened, but he is a super nice guy. I mean, I don't know how else I can say it. He's always smiling. This guy is a super nice and very happy man, at least when he's
coming
at the con.
From someone who I see very often smiling, welcoming people, bringing them into his own own home, playing games with them. I take that compliment very highly, because you are also both wonderful. I remember it was a couple of years ago that Karen and I were at Kubla. I think it was Kubla, and we were just not having like the best of times. We hadn't gotten into a game, and a couple things had just gone wrong, and I can't even remember what they were, but I know we just sort of had like a few consecutive mishaps, and we were just, like you said, I'm generally smiling, but that was a time when it was hard to do. And we played a game of Turn and Taxis together, and it was so, it was so fun, because we're just like, here we have these wonderful, delightful, great people. And you were both just so, you taught us the game, and you were both just like so gracious and taught us strategy. You weren't like, okay, here's how you play, but now I'm going to try and win. And that, you're both just, you're so great to spend time with and to learn from. And we loved it. It really turned our day around. It was great. We bought Turn and Taxis the next day, but it wasn't the same, it wasn't playing with you two.
Yeah. But it's funny, because a lot of people will teach somebody to play a game and they'll smash them. And I've had my friends play games with other friends of mine, and they will absolutely refuse to play a game, because the first game they played with somebody else was like, they go, oh, is this how you play the game? And then I would beat everybody by 200 points. I'm like, no, that's not the point of teaching somebody a game.
Yeah.
You want them to have fun.
No, and I'm so bad about that. Like, I am so competitive at work.
You're a little bit competitive.
That's why I play role-playing games, because there's no winner. I never have to worry about competing with anybody. I'm always just like, we told a good story. Awesome. We all won. Yay. Because you get me board games, and I'm like, I want all the points. Give me all of them.
Well, we almost got an hour, so I know you got to go. Anything you want to tell our people? Anything,
if whatever you're thinking about it, since we've been talking about it, I'm going to go ahead and give us a little shill. Big Bad Con is October 10th to 13th this year in Walnut Creek. As we've been talking about, it is a really welcoming, wonderful place. We have a board game track, we have a RPG track, we have a panel track, we have a LARP track, and just really fantastic folks. Hopefully this always competes with I don't know if you name your little one on the show, but this always competes with a certain birthday party. So it's always been a struggle, but I'm hoping I can get Sol and Jillian out this year.
We'll try.
Yeah, Augustine, you know, he seems indifferent to us doing things with him. But sure enough, like, you know, we ask him, you want to do something? Because I'm trying to get off from doing something with him to go to Big Bad Con. And he goes, no. And then at the last minute, he goes, I want to do this.
Yes. Like, okay. Well, yeah, parenting 101, right? Is your kids only tell you at the very last minute what they actually want. Yeah. I'm
familiar with that one. Exactly. So I've been there a couple of times, and the last time I was there, unfortunately, it's been since you were in Oakland, but I played in three games all day Saturday.
And he loved it.
And I loved it. It was amazing. Con. And back then, I don't think you had that many private rooms. So to hear that you have 45 private rooms, that's amazing.
I know. Back then, I think, depending on the year you were there, either 9 or 18. And there was still a lot of games being run right next to each other. Everybody's tons of noise. The board games are still in an open big area for practical, practical reasons. But the board games actually have their own space, their own track. And I'm so glad to hear that you had a good time then. The Walnut, Marriott, nothing against the Hilton, but the Walnut Creek Marriott is very nice.
No, I talked about it last time. I saw pictures of the place. It looks really nice. And someplace Jolene wouldn't mind staying. I think, it's
pretty true. Awesome. Well,
so we'll keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully Augustine doesn't mind.
But it's his 16th birthday.
But we'll see. We'll get away from him for 1 or 2 days. And yes, I agree. Everybody should who has a chance. Well, your Kickstarter is over.
So the way to attend, if you want to, is you're actually gonna have to wait a couple weeks, because we've got to do that. We're in that weird Kickstarter just finished. I need to get the funds in. As soon as that goes through, we'll open up more badge sales through BackerKit and on the website. And so give it till end of June, and you'll be able to go to bigbadcon.com and get a ticket. Don't worry, they won't sell out by then. The Kickstarter is over, and it hit every goal, so I'm very happy about it. not worried about that one at all. See all the events that have been submitted, but we won't make the schedule until August because we take submissions till August 15th. Okay. And then by late August, early September, we'll send out a schedule to everyone and say, here's what the schedule is. We'll give everyone a week or so to look at it, and then we'll open up game signups. So,
yeah. Cool.
You still got time.
All right. So I still got a chance. I know. I've been telling Sean, I'm going to pledge. And the freaking week went by so fast. I looked, I go, oh, man.
Do not worry.
It was dumb of me.
I'll
get you on the back of kit. All right, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on and spending an hour of your precious time. I know you're a busy man, busy father, busy husband. You have a real job. And then, you're doing all this extra stuff for Big Bad.
Both have been, like I said, just wonderful. It's very supportive of the con for years. And it's thank you so much for having me on the show to talk about it, too.
This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. Have a great day.
Have a good day.